Spirit Blade Underground, May 28th, 2010.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, May 28th, 2010.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. Speaking of which, let's get into updates.
File access. Update.
The Spirit Blade Underground Alliance, that's a volunteer group supported by SpiritBlade.net, has just released Untold Alliances, an original new audio drama. In an alternate history Earth filled with magic and futuristic technology, a disturbing evil has been discovered by the Theocracy. A tainted military commander is sent to investigate, but will he be transformed or destroyed in the process? You can find out by downloading Untold Alliances right now and find some other cool free audio fiction over at spiritblade.net/alliance. And after you listen to that, there's more free stuff at spiritblade.net/free stuff. So go check out both of those. And as always, you're invited to join the Alliance and be a part of creating exciting new audio drama as well. For more information, like I said, spiritblade.net/alliance. We're having a lot of fun over there, and we would love to get more people involved. So if you are creative in any manner, be it visually, or you like to write, or you want to take a crack at editing some audio, or you want to try your hand at acting, or whatever the case may be, we'd love for you to join the fun over at spiritblade.net/alliance. In the meantime, though, check out Untold Alliances, really cool new project that the group put together. They did a fantastic job, and I am proud have played any role in assembling it. It really turned out great. Let's see what else. With the school semester finally over, I am back into mostly uninterrupted work in my office. It's been great. I've been working on remixing Fly this week and have certainly hit my stride. The background track, for those of you who don't know, Fly is one of the songs from Spirit Blade, and I'm currently remixing all of the songs from Spirit Blade to release them in a song bundle, and I'm also going to be releasing the Dark Ritual songs in a song bundle, and that should be coming up soon here. The background track for Fly is largely finished, and I'm going through the vocal track right now to clean it up and decide what effects I want to use. As with the other remixes, I'm keeping the general feel of the song the same. Although it has a slightly harder edge to it, the remix of Fly still maintains the energetic, positive sound of the original. It also has many more percussive layers and a few added fast arpeggios that propel the song forward even more. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I hope you guys enjoy it as well. I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to finish the song until early next week. Let's see, I'm taking Monday off, but it's likely going to be done by Wednesday of next week, so I'm very excited about that. I also want to remind you guys again, this is probably your last chance because I'm only keeping this poll up until the end of May, but if you go over to spiritblade.net/blog, spiritblade.net/blog, I'd love for you to vote on the poll that I have set up there, answering the question, how involved would you likely be if a Spirit Blade Underground forum were created? I'd love to get your input on that. If you haven't voted already, I'm going to be kind of compiling that information, and then in the next few weeks, based on the votes that I get, I'll make a decision on whether or not to move forward with a Spirit Blade Underground forum. So I'd love to get your input on that. Even if you'd never come, or if you'd come a lot, or whatever you think your involvement would be, I really want to hear from you. Spiritblade.net/blog. And that's also the place, you know, I haven't plugged the blog in a while, but it's also the place where you can keep up to date on all that's going on at Spirit Blade Productions. There's some cool links to resources you can check out to go deeper in your personal Bible study. There are links to kind of Friends of the Spirit Blade Underground that you can check out. Lots of cool stuff there. I haven't plugged that in a while. And then also, of course, you know, I haven't plugged Pater's Brain. That's my personal blog, spiritblade.net/Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R. Lots of stuff slips through the cracks. You know, I take material from both of these blogs, and that's kind of how I assemble the podcast for the most case. But some stuff, like my kind of little journal I've been keeping of my playing of Final Fantasy 13 and other little tidbits, they slip through the cracks, don't have time for them in the show. And I have been talking a little bit more about Final Fantasy 13 since my first five review of the game last week. So if you want to be up to date on what my current thoughts are, and they have changed some, you can go over to spiritblade.net/Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R. All right, well, we've got two movie reviews on the show today, plus we're going to be kind of revisiting, because Paul revisits it, the idea of preachers or teachers being paid for what they do. Pastors and teachers and ministers and people and, you know, involved in sharing the truth of the gospel for a living. The idea of them making their living off of that. We're going to kind of revisit that today. So we got a lot to do. So we can't waste any more time. Let's go. Oh no! Wait! No! We can't. Let's go. I totally forgot to announce. I didn't get the full name of the T-shirt contest winner last week, but I got in touch with him and got his last name. Matthew Silber sent in the winning submission for the T-shirt contest. You can check out his site, www.ganarus. I'm not sure how that is pronounced. Ganarus. I don't know what that means. ganarus.wordpress.com. Matthew Silber was the winner. Speaking of which, I just got my T-shirt in the mail today, and I am really excited about it. I'm going to send the T-shirts off to the winners, and then I'm going to open up the store for you guys to check out. So I should have a link for you guys to the store where you can get the T-shirts next week. Okay. So congrats again, Matthew. Thank you so much. Awesome job. Awesome job. Okay, now we can get to it.
Primary feature.
Movie review.
Activating.
Well, I ran out of time last week, but Matt M. sent me a great review for the new Robin Hood movie that I'm happy to share with you guys now. Matt writes, "While a historic film like Robin Hood would not normally be the type of film reviewed here, meaning this podcast, stories set in a far historical setting are so different from our own modern world that it is almost like a fantasy story anyway. First off, if you're wanting to see a romping swashbuckler, look elsewhere. Unlike the well-known previous incarnations of this legend, this Robin Hood is a serious war drama. It is rife with action and battles, but there's a lot of this thing called plot in there as well, a trait more and more summer movies are seeing fit to minimize. Directed by Ridley Scott, with much creative input from its star, Russell Crowe, comparisons to Gladiator are both inevitable and apt. To put it simply, if you liked Gladiator, you'll probably like Robin Hood. The style, pacing, acting, story, and intricacy are all very similar. If you're not familiar with the standards of the Robin Hood legend, you won't be at a disadvantage here. Most of the classic ideas are here, but restated and/or minimized. And don't even ask about the bright green tights. If there's any major flaw to this movie, it moves at a fairly slow pace, but few scenes feel like they're just atmosphere or filler. It is a complex story, and it takes time to be told. In fact, if you're interested in the Middle Ages, and I'm especially writing this to my girlfriend Kim W., I want to be clear, that's Matt's girlfriend, not mine, you will love the details of this movie. Medieval movies tend to either over-glamorize or over-grungify the era, but this movie displays both sides of the time period and really makes you feel that you're simply in another time. Also wonderfully done are the characters. Past versions of the story have featured broad, archetypal characters, or characters specifically designed to flout conventions, like having a neo-feminist Marian. This Marian, I feel, was a standout character because she was strong and admirable without feeling like a modern woman put into a peasant's costume to bring in the female viewership. Cate Blanchett's Marian is a woman of her time, but the best of what it means to be a woman of her time. The romance between her and Robin, sorry if that's a spoiler, but come on, who doesn't know about the romance of Robin Hood and Maid Marian, is gentle, courtly, and decent. It flows naturally from the characters rather than the typically contrived romance of typical movies. I'm the hero, you're the heroine, we kind of have to hook up. None of the characters are simplistic caricatures or unwelcome modernizations. They feel like real people living in a real time and dealing with real problems. No one is perfect. No one is a perfect shining avatar of virtue, nor is anyone in line to be the next Hitler. Nevertheless, this movie doesn't devolve into amoralizing the story. You know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, but people are on the side they are because of the choices they make, just as in real life. The theme of the movie seems largely to be the need to stand up to injustice, to endure and resist until the time comes to fight and to unite when needed. Many stories talk about the need to set aside differences and work together, and many other stories emphasize the need to hold on to one's convictions. But this is one of the few movies I've seen that shows the need to do both. Without digressing into partisanship, this nation is becoming more and more divided, and the time may come when we all must choose sides. The time may also come to set those differences aside. What's just as important as either of these decisions, however, is the wisdom to know when to do which, and this movie will serve as a helpful springboard for discussion on that point. Long story short, I love this movie. I don't know how accurate the points of history are, and I don't really care. Factuality has never meant as much to me as relevance and clarity, and Robin Hood has both in spades. It will take a place with other historical favorites of mine like Braveheart, Gladiator, and The Patriot. I give it a quality rating of 8.75 out of 10 and a relevance rating of 8 out of 10. Man, thanks, Matt. That was a great review. Man, I think you should probably be writing my reviews from now on. Very insightful. Really makes me want to see the movie, and I appreciate you kind of delving into kind of the themes of the movie. Very cool stuff. Let's see here. Okay, so now my review, which is going to suck by comparison. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. All I really know about the Prince of Persia video games is that the first one was way too freaking hard for me, so I never bothered with the others. Though I do hear that's changed. Anyway, so I didn't come into the theater as a fan of the video games, just a fan of fantasy adventure. Prince of Persia's story centers on a young street urchin turned prince who finds himself caught in the middle of treachery within his adopted royal family. He is accused of a murder and is on the run for most of the movie, trying to prove his innocence by unmasking the true culprit and his evil schemes. There is plenty of adventure to be had as the title character, cleverly played, I gotta say, by Jake Gyllenhaal, leaps from roof to wall like an ancient free runner, stopping now and then to engage in fast-paced swordplay. Some of the early action scenes especially are clever in their design and very engaging to watch. Fights are well choreographed, but with no innovation. The story is straightforward and somewhat predictable. Performances are fine, though these actors were not given much to work with. This is an action-driven movie. If that's what you're looking for, that's what you're going to get. Characterization moments are obviously planted in the script rather than coming through the material naturally. But, you know, if you're a fan of lighthearted adventure with just a touch of darkness now and then, you may find this movie has some things in common with the first three Indiana Jones films, especially in terms of its tone. It's lighthearted, but it does have some stuff that, you know, might be scary for the kiddies. You know, not much meat to the characters, but they do serve the plot well. The special effects are standard quality and not as common in the film as the trailers would have you believe. Boy, that's so frustrating when trailers are like wall-to-wall CGI and you go to the movie and find out it was just all one scene. Not the case, not that bad here. They do shoot for some pretty big moments near the end that you may find fun to watch. Now, I gotta say, you know, maybe I'm getting even more jaded toward Hollywood CGI, or maybe I'm just playing too many video games, but when big summer movie effects are no more interesting to my eye than an average video game session, I feel like Hollywood needs to raise the bar. I mean, at least I can interact with those visuals in my video game. And I'm not convinced that 3D is the answer. After all, video games are delving into that too. The score of this movie, very enjoyable. It blends the sounds you'd expect to hear in a fantasy adventure score with an appropriate Middle Eastern quality to it. Now, I don't think it's very likely that many will come away from this movie and have a meaningful discussion about anything of real worth as a result. It's you know, like I said, it's about action and plot and moving things forward and, you know, lots of stuff happening, you know. It's not really about dealing with themes and serious characters and stuff like that. So I don't think anybody's going to, you know, really walk away from this feeling all philosophically moved to discuss some deep issue of life. But I'd still like to draw attention to a couple of pop spirituality cliches that once again find their way into a Hollywood script. Now, I'm going to spend much more time on this than the movie emphasizes them. You won't walk away with these being major points, but I'm just kind of using this as an object lesson, if you will. You know, there's a dozen movies that use these ideas, but, you know, I figure, hey, why don't we just take the chance here and point these suckers out? Because maybe they'll be more noticeable to you as you as they pop up in future movies. Because if you look for them, they pop up all over the place. Now, the first comes near the beginning, when a Persian royal advisor is talking about the kingdom that they're about to invade. With a little bit of disgust in his tone, speaking of this kingdom's religious beliefs, he says that this kingdom is open to no truth but their own. Now, I understand what he means to convey, I think, but using the word truth instead of ideas or beliefs suggests flexibility to the nature of truth. Yet truth does not really change, and it never is inconsistent with itself. Truth is truth. You know, so I think it would have been better if he said that this kingdom is open to no ideas but their own, or is open to no beliefs but their own. But he kind of gives this idea that truth can be possessed by someone, you know, that this person can have some truth and this person can have some truth. Truth, according to Webster, is that which conforms to fact or reality. It's above and beyond perceived experience. There is no such thing as your truth or my truth. There is only the truth. One or both of us may conclude wrongly what the truth is, but there is still only one actual truth. A very small, almost unnoticeable bit in the script, but when a word is misused so many times, as truth is by Hollywood, we can forget in our day-to-day conversations what the word actually means, and a word like truth has a definition that I think is really important to remember when we're considering the bigger issues of life and what we believe. Of greater notice are two key moments in the script, one during the resolution of the climax, where we hear the proverb, in both instances, "A good king listens to counsel, but always follows his heart." If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you probably like, oh yeah, that would trigger Pater's radar. I think a better proverb there would be, "A good king listens to counsel, but always uses his best judgment." Why? Because no one that I know of has ever, you know, if you know of somebody, let me know. No one that I know of has ever nailed down what it actually means to, quote, follow your heart. Does that mean follow your instincts? Follow your feelings? Do what you think is right? How do you know what your heart is telling you? Is it like a little beeping noise you hear? Is it heartburn? Is it like a flush, you know, of blood draining from your... What does that feel like? Or whatever. What, you know, how do you know that what your heart is telling you? The truth is, follow your heart really just amounts to do what you want to do. And this advice only works when the heart in question is guaranteed to be good and noble. After all, you never hear characters in movies tell a bad guy to follow their hearts. And I don't mean bad like Darth Vader, you know, because they could have gotten away with that because, oh, he was good on the inside or whatever, you know. I mean bad like Emperor Palpatine bad, you know, just through and through. They never told, you know, in the climactic scene of Star Wars, Yoda, you know, of what was it, the second episode two? When or, no, it was the third one, I think, episode three. Yoda didn't stop the fight, you know, and say, "Emperor Palpatine, follow your heart, you must," you know. It would have been insane if he would have said that, you know. And we also, you know, say that, you know, these bad guys, the reason we wouldn't say that to them is, well, they don't have a heart to follow, you know, as though the heart is some pure, untainted compass for life that only the most evil people do not possess. But from a scriptural perspective, and I value scripture because I think that it has, the Bible has just proven itself historically, archaeologically, over and above any other religious text, the Bible holds up to intellectual criticism. And so that's where I go for my answers about truth and the what's going on behind the veil of the universe. So Jeremiah 17:9 says that the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? You know, I've got a non-Christian friend who laughed in agreement when I pointed her to that verse. She'd had a series of bad dating relationships and said, "That's right, my heart lies to me," you know? Script writers have complete control and can guarantee that follow your heart will always be the best advice for their characters. But in real life, it's not near that simple. All right, so back to the movie. Summing it up, the movie is a fun ride that never gets emotionally intense. You probably won't ever grip the edge of your seat, but you may very well enjoy what you're watching. An exception to the norm, I gotta say, for video game movies. The MPAA gives it a PG-13 for intense sequences of violence and action. I give it a quality rating of 8.0 out of 10 and a relevance rating of 7.0 out of 10.
I'm Matt York, and I'm a hero.
And I'm the Snarky Avenger, and I'm a superhero.
I fight demons and their earthly agents with my friends using only my military training and my faith.
I live in a secret base in a cave behind a waterfall, and I have a personal assistant and an AI computer.
Most people don't know who I am or what I do.
I'm famous, have lots of toys, and have superpowers like invulnerability and the power of Snark.
When it comes to most things, we're pretty different.
Yes, but no matter how much cooler being a superhero is than being a hero,
hey,
I think what you do is cool, and I love to listen to your adventures in Archangel.
I love your show too, man. The interviews, the rants, and the reviews are great, in spite of the occasional heresy.
So there you have it, folks.
Whether you're a hero, a superhero, or just regular people,
we can all agree both Archangel and Snark Infested Waters are awesome podcasts that you should listen to. You can find Archangel at www.archangelnovel.com.
And you can find Snark Infested Waters at thesnarkyavenger.com.
Go check them out now. Hey man, you seem to have gotten the short end of the stick. Might want to find a new agent. You want my agent's number?
It's cool, man. God's got my back. But I would love a ride in the Snark Jet sometime.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word about God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We're looking at verses 7 through 15 this week. I'm going to go ahead and read that to you from the New International Version of the Bible. Was it a sin for me, Paul says, to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you. And when I was with you and needed something, I was not a burden to anyone, for the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied what I needed. I have kept myself from being a burden to you in any way and will continue to do so. As surely as the truth of Christ is in me, nobody in the regions of Achaia will stop this boasting of mine. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows I do. And I will keep on doing what I am doing in order to cut the ground from under those who want an opportunity to be considered equal with us in the things they boast about. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising, then, if his servants masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve. In Greek culture at this time, teachers and philosophers were expected to receive payment from patrons. It was considered actually disgraceful by the upper class Greeks for a teacher to teach for free and perform manual labor for a living. It was kind of a mark of pride. You might be able to think of it in terms of, you know, you get what you pay for. So if this guy's not being paid, well, he must not be any good, you know. Although Paul received support from other churches, he did not ask for support from the Corinthian or surrounding Achaean churches. He also helped create income for himself by making tents, and you can see that verified in Acts chapter 18, verse 3, where it establishes that Paul did make a living making tents. Because money has been abused by church leaders in some cases, we can tend to think that pastors should not be paid or should be paid very little, or that they are somehow more holy if they do not accept payment. But you may remember that by contrast, Paul taught that teachers should be paid, and we looked at that. If you haven't listened, you can go back to the earlier podcast where we're looking at 1 Corinthians 9, 6 through 12, or just read it for yourself. It's pretty clear, I think. So why was Paul not taking payment from the church in Corinth when he had previously taught that teachers should be paid? Paul responds to the accusation that he was doing wrong by preaching for free. Look at verse 7. He even recognized that it was not the normal expectation by saying that he was robbing, in a sense, the churches that were supporting him, even though it was the Corinthians who were benefiting. Look at verse 8. But he preached for free for just that reason, to benefit the Corinthian church, because that was what was going to benefit them the most, to avoid being a financial burden to them. Look at verse 9. He also wanted to differentiate himself from the many false teachers in Corinth who were abusing their status for financial gain. Remember that Corinth was kind of a nexus for all kinds of pagan religions and weird ideas and stuff like that. It was melting pot of religious ideas. And so he wanted to differentiate himself from the many false teachers in Corinth who were abusing their status just to kind of get rich. Look at 2 Corinthians 2:17. And Paul emphatically stated that he would continue to be able to say that he took no payment from Corinth or the surrounding Achaean region. Look at verse 10. So what about pastors today? Should they be paid or should they volunteer? We've looked at this issue before, so you know I'm not going to go into it exhaustively here. But based on the teachings of Paul we've looked at so far and his behavior here, we can say that paying pastors is right, and it should be the norm. Now, some pastors may choose not to take payment or may be paid very little, but this should only be true when it is of spiritual benefit to those being taught. Once a congregation has grown enough in number and maturity to provide financial support of any kind for their pastor, they should do so. But I do think that's the norm being presented here. I think if a pastor is not being paid, or you know, if people are in a congregation are kind of like, oh, we don't want to pay our pastor, you know, there might be something going on that you know, with the pastor. Maybe he's not a good pastor, or maybe the congregation just doesn't have a right view of the topic, and they need to understand what Scripture teaches on it. But the norm should be that pastors and teachers of the gospel should be compensated. They should be able to, if they are called to do that full time, then they should be able to be compensated and make their living from the gospel. Verse 11 implies that the Corinthians doubted Paul's love for them, or that his love was being brought into question by some. There are a couple possible reasons for this. The first is that the upper-class Corinthian Greeks would have been embarrassed that their teacher was not professional enough to accept payment. To them, Paul may have seemed uncaring about their sense of honor and reputation, you know, for having this you know, lousy teacher doesn't get paid, you know. Another possible reason is that Paul was being inconsistent with the expectation he himself established regarding the payment of preachers. We've already seen that Paul's consistency was being brought into question. Look at 2 Corinthians 10:10. So to their minds, perceived hypocrisy, you know, they see him not doing what he was teaching, not applying to himself what he was teaching. Perceived hypocrisy in his teaching might also indicate insincerity in Paul's love for them. In either case, Paul denies his insincerity, saying that God, if no one else, knows that Paul genuinely loves them. Paul also commits to continue teaching without pay from them so that he can keep the false teachers from gaining equal footing with him in the eyes of the Corinthians. Look at verse 12. And doing this was so important to Paul because these other teachers that were gaining a voice with the Corinthians were teaching them false ideas and were deceitful about themselves and their motives. Look at verse 13. Paul, I think, is a great example and inspiration to us in his behavior here. He was making financial sacrifices. He was looking bad to others so that he could serve those who were calling his character into question. If that isn't a sentence describing the lives of so many good pastors, I don't know what is. Why not send a quick email to your pastor and thank them for all the ministry they do that we get to see, and for the private pains they endure that no one sees? Every once in a while, I send an email to my head pastor or to the guy, the worship pastor now. I served as a worship pastor for only 2 years, but I can tell you from even that small amount of experience, it would mean a great deal to them and be a wonderful encouragement to help them through the week. They're dealing with people issues and conflicts much of the time, even in healthy churches. In fact, I think especially in healthy churches, because that's when growing is happening and people don't like to grow, and so there tends to be a little bit of conflict. So anyway, it would mean a great deal to them if you just send them an email, just like one or two sentences or something like that. Just say, hey, thanks for, you know, all the praise you offer up on Sunday mornings, and all the pain that no one sees, you know, that you deal with. Anyway, Paul observes that it makes perfect sense for these false teachers in Corinth to portray themselves as genuine teachers of truth. This is the very nature of Satan himself. Look at verse 14. And those who follow him will often follow a similar pattern in their teaching. Look at verse 15. But were these false teachers really serving Satan, as Paul says? That's pretty intense. He says that in verse 15. Well, one does not have to worship Satan or even believe in his existence in order to serve his agenda. You might remember that Jesus told some religious leaders that they were following the desires of the devil and that he was their father. Look at John chapter 8, verse 39 through 44. Although they had convinced themselves that they were among the spiritually elite worshipers of God, they were actually servants of Satan without even realizing it. I had a friend in high school who subscribed to a particular religious view based on a subjective spiritual experience that he'd had. When I asked him how he knew that experience was given to him by God, he said that he would have known if it was from an evil source. He would have sensed it, though he kind of dodged being specific regarding how he could know that he would accurately sense something like that. The truth is that false ideas can and do often come to us in ways that seem right and good and are spiritually moving. But this is the way Satan operates. He is a spiritual being, so we need something other than our feelings or spiritual senses. Satan is the prince of lies in addition to being a spiritual, so he'd be good at giving us spiritual experiences that are lies, you know? So we need something other than our feelings or spiritual senses to determine what is true and what is false. This is why Paul worked so hard to validate his teaching. The Word of God has proved its reliability again and again. It not only fulfills the needs of the heart, but also stands up to the harshest intellectual criticism. It provides the most effective screening technique, if you will, for evaluation of experiences and ideas. Next week, we're going to take a look at some of the ways that Paul suffered in his life serving Christ. And the coffeehouse question this week, do you feel comfortable with the idea of pastors being paid for their work? Why or why not? I'd love to hear from you. PAETER at spiritblade.net. If you want to email me and I can read your email on the podcast, or leave me a phone message, I can play it on the podcast. 206-350-1226. An email I got last week, I ran out of time to share it. I want to share it now. From Steve Dorning. Steve writes, "You found a movie that we both agree on. After your review of Defendor," excuse me, fighting off a burp there. "After your review of Defendor, I decided to watch the movie. I haven't had a lot of time lately, but I finally managed to see it. It was an excellent movie. I usually don't watch movies with a superhero theme that are labeled comedy. I may have to stop making that reflex judgment after watching this one. It was sadly labeled as a dark comedy, I think only because someone couldn't figure out what category to place it in. Yes, it did have a few funny scenes, but mostly it was a dark tragedy. I wanted to sit down and write you as soon as I finished watching it, but I haven't had time until now. A friend of mine took me to see Iron Man 2 yesterday, and I'm with you on that one too. I still think the first one was better, but I guess that's the way it is with most movies. It's hard to beat the origin stories. Keep up the awesome work. Love the podcast. Your brother in Christ, Steve Dorning." Thanks, Steve. And Steve Dorning is actually an author, and you can check out his site. I did a little audio promo for one of his books that you might get a kick out of over at heavymetalcowboy.com. All right, that's it for this week. If there's some... Oh, yeah, I just want to remind you guys, Summer of Free. The Summer of Free is here, so check out last week's podcast for details on that, or you can check the blog at Pater's Brain for details. I'm looking for free entertainment that we can all share, that you can find online. Free and unquestionably legal, I want to be clear on. So we can all save some money this summer. So send it my way, and we can all celebrate the Summer of Free! For the second time, it's been recommended to me to check out the Dungeons & Dragons online game, because that is free. So I haven't gotten a chance to get to it yet, but that is something I want to check out. Hopefully I'll have some ideas and things to share with you guys soon. Hopefully you guys will send them to me and I'll have them to share, as well as anything else I dig up. But that's it for this week. I don't know what's coming next week as usual. I haven't checked to see if there's any movies coming out next week. I saw a trailer today before Prince of Persia for Tron, and it's not the one that you've normally seen online, like the teaser thing, you know, with the light cycles and stuff. This was like actually Bruce Boxleitner and the guy playing Flynn's son and stuff, and like they were, you know, it was cool, very exciting. And Sorcerer's Apprentice, that looks, you know, I'm probably being teased, I think. I saw a couple trailers, you know, that I was like, man, it looks like there's lots of great summer movies coming out. I get betrayed so often in the past, and I think, you know, they're... I'm just wondering if they're, you know, going to suck. You know, you got Sorcerer's Apprentice, you got, what is it, the Avatar, The Last Airbender, and, well, I guess we all know Twilight's going to suck, right? No. Sorry, Twilight fans. I've not even gotten past the trailers, and my sister reads the books, has told me all about them, and she's seen all the movies, and, oh my gosh, I'm not touching those with a 30-foot pole. But you Twilight fans, I hope you dig it. And hey, if you want to send me a review, you're guaranteed that I am not going to review it. So feel free to send a review my way when Twilight Eclipse comes out. Anyway, that's it. Have a great week. And in all the summer of free action we're finding, all the searching, you know, especially I think on the internet, I think this is always good to remind ourselves as we're searching the internet. Lots of cool stuff out there. Lots of other stuff too, both philosophical and just in terms of visual content that's probably not the best for us. So let's just discern as best we can and always try to seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.